Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for August 2014 through Diamond to retailers and all that usual jazz. Hardcover, softcovers, original stuff, unoriginal stuff, reprints, all sorts of craziness. You know, it's getting to where, Chris, when we look at the breakdown of the trades, we're seeing a lot of the usual suspects and stuff, particularly at the top. DC this time, 32.49% of the total units for the top 300 trades. So not quite a third, but close enough. Marvel had 23.73% of the total units for the top 300. And Image had 12.33%. Image, I think, is really on an upswing these days. They've got enough kind of high-profile new properties starting out. When they start getting into the trades, that helps out and stuff. Mm-hmm. But just these three publishers, 68.55% of the total units for the top 300 trades. And that's pretty impressive for just three. If you go ahead and add in Dark Horse, which had another 5.2%, IDW another 3.19% of the total units for the top 300, that's just shy of 77%. It's 76.95%. You know, leaving that remaining, 23.05% for everybody else to fight over. And it's a much more aggressive fight, I think, on the trade side than on the comic side, just because it's easier, I think, for some of these other publishers to kind of get a foothold on the list. But because of the nature of collected editions and, you know, trades, hardcovers, etc., any individual property is going to show up there, you know, two times a year, maybe with new stuff or at least a new release, not necessarily new content. Which means we get this is just a more dynamic list in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really hasn't changed over the years either, has it? I mean, it's been pretty much the same.
Yeah, I think, you know, Marvel is on the list where it is because it's aggressive with how quickly they release stuff.
Yeah.
DC's got a really strong trade list, heavily with the Vertigo side on that. Image is the one that's really kind of coming out with a lot of new titles and whatnot. And it's one of those things, I don't see any of that changing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with Fables and Ferrest slated to end soon, as well as Unwritten over at Vertigo, you know, that's going to be interesting to see if DC can put some new stuff on there, you know.
Well, I mean, they're trying with like Dead Boy Detectives and stuff like that, and the Sandman Overture stuff has been taking forever to come out, as you know.
But that's going to be one collected edition.
Exactly, right, yeah. So, you know, it's just, I think they are going to try new things. It's just a matter of time. Or maybe they're going to get rid of Vertigo altogether. I don't see that happening, but that, you know, when they switched over from the editor, Karen Berger, you know, that was brought up in the blogosphere, you know, what's going to happen to Vertigo, but you know, it seems to be like it's still going strong. So,
well, it's still going.
It's still going.
Well, I want to be clear. It's not that strong. It's not weak at all, but they don't have a Hellblazer, a Sandman, a Preacher, you know, a Why the Last Man. They've got Fables and stuff sooner. I mean, within the year, those are, you know, going to be fading away. Mm-hmm. So have they come up with a new ongoing thing to kind of be that anchor property? And I hope they can, because it would be a real shame if Vertigo were to just kind of fade away over time.
Yeah.
There's been a ton of great things that have come out of there, and, you know, I want to see that continue.
I'll tell you what, I would, just reading Swamp Thing and Animal Man the past couple years with the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they were ever to, and we've seen the demise of the New 52 with, you know, cutting off at, you know, certain issues and whatnot, but if they were to ever get rid of those two properties, I would hope they would shift them over to Vertigo and make them more adult in nature as they previously were back in the day.
I would like to see that not happen.
Really?
I think one of the issues with how Vertigo was is it was not schizophrenic, but certainly bipolar. in so much as half the stuff was along the lines of like a Fables or an Unwritten or a Federal Bureau of Physics and stuff, where it was clearly its own little reality, its own thing, no connection whatsoever to the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of the things that have been longer running titles over at Vertigo, Sandman, Swamp Thing, Hellblazer.
Right. Well, Hellblazer is one of those that moved into the New 52.
That's my point. All of those had strong, strong roots in the DC universe.
Yeah.
And it always kind of made Vertigo, is it part of the DC universe? Is it not? It was, but it wasn't.
Right.
And they've unblurred that line.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see them kind of blur it again. That having been said, if they were to end Animal Man or Swamp Thing, I would hope that they have something else in terms of keeping those kinds of characters and that what used to be Vertigo kind of a thing alive and going in the DC universe.
Well, see, I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't want to see Swamp Thing and Animal Man, just as an example, or even Hellblazer if they bring it back, as an offshoot of the DC universe. I want to see it as in what Punisher Max did over at Marvel. I want it to be a separate ongoing thing, entity all of its own, and not blur the line. And,
so you're saying cross the line entirely.
Just cross the line entirely. And Marvel had that going. I mean, you know me, I'm a big Punisher fan, but you know, they had that going with their Max line. It was definitive that it was not part of the 616. It was not that the Max imprint crossed over. I mean, Fury Max kind of did a little last year. But you know, Max has been going on for a long time. And you know, they made no bones about it. This is for the older crowd. And I think they can do that. Well, while they had the Punisher in 616, while they had the Punisher in the Max, and even, you know, the Ultimate line, they had all these distinct universes going on. And I think that DC could do that as well with these characters. With the tights and capes type superheroes that are traditional to the DC comic book universe, universe.
I get what you're saying. I guess for me, that kind of was a blurred line as well.
Yeah.
It's like I knew that the Punisher stuff and the Max stuff was not really tight continuity or anything, but it was one of those, on the surface, it's the same looking guy with the same kind of guns and this, you know, darker story with different tone, but it wasn't so decisively different like the Miles Morales versus the Peter Parker Spider-Man. Now, granted, when Ultimate started, you could have claimed that was blurred lines too, and for some people it was.
But didn't you think, I mean, you've read Swamp Thing, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. I mean, looking back on that, and I'm going to pull that out in a couple of weeks and reread it again. But when I reread that I read it way back in the day, mm-hmm. and then I reread it in the hardcovers that came out. And boy, I really, really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed Moore's writing, the intelligence factor. It kind of spoke to me as an adult in my 40s and not, you know, the superhero kid back when I was a teenager and reading Superman or Batman kind of thing. You know, these are the comics that in my age now that I really enjoy. And I guess that's why I do like Vertigo, or I do like, you know, and granted it's ultra violent to an extent, but the Punisher stuff in the Max imprint, it's just more adult in nature. And I am mature enough that I can take it. I can accept it.
Well, I think there's two things kind of going on there that often get blurred. There's the more sophisticated storytelling style and the more depth of story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Certainly Alan Moore, I think there's no bones about it. You can easily say this guy can write a fairly intricate, deep, complex, and complicated story.
Yeah.
Yet make it readable and do that well in comic form. So there's that, and I'm all for the maturing of the depth, the scope, the breadth, the nature of the storytelling style. But then there's also the stuff that tends to be the darker subject matter, the gritty violence and stuff like that we've gotten both at Max and in Vertigo at times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that there is some sense that those have to kind of go together,
mm-hmm.
because I think I think there's a huge opportunity for seriously well-written mystery stories starring Batman.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's missing very much so. Yeah.
You know, what we're getting is good, but some of it's kind of, you know, light on the mystery side. It's, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. And maybe we'll be getting more of that in the future. Maybe we won't. But it's one of those things that you can tell more intricate and involved stories without having to beat somebody bloody or, you know, invoke demons or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprises me how often the more mature seems to have to cover both of those aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking over on the comic side for a moment, Swamp Thing number 34, 17,570 units. That's pretty low. Constantine, 15,647 units. And, of course, Animal Man has already ended.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, is there cause for concern on these titles? Yeah, I think there is.
What about Justice League Dark? How's that doing?
Excellent question. That is 25,258. Okay. So safe. I use 20,000 as the rough kind of it's in the danger zone. DC titles can get surprisingly far below that sometimes before they end.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see these characters kind of stick around in some shape, fashion, form, whatever. But I really like having a clear division between, you know, what characters are at play in the Vertigo area and what's in play in the DC universe area. Likewise, over at Max and stuff, I think it risks confusion and unfortunate consequences when you've got characters that are kind of, you know, flipping between the two lines or going in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've actually had discussions with some people in the past that were, you know, confused when they picked up an Ultimate book, and it's like, how come everything's different? You know, it's right. Got the word Ultimate in front of it. So what?
Why do we have a Black Spider-Man?
Yeah. You know,
what's going on?
Why are these X-Men different? How is Ultimate X-Men, how am I supposed to know that's different than Uncanny,
right?
You know, or whatever other adjective in front of it? Why is that one special?
Yeah. Why is Thor insane? Why are all these characters different? You know, what's up with Cap and his outfit and everything? Yeah.
So, I mean, keeping the branding clear and the narrative universe is clear, I think's important.
Right.
You know?
And make no mistake, I mean, I am making conversation. I know that there's intelligent comic books out there. I mean, I see them every single day. And, you know, and we're going to kind of get into Jim Starlin a little bit later on. But another thing that came to my mind was his Dreadstar run back with Epic. And, you know, that was some fantastic storytelling back in the day.
You know, I've got
great stuff.
I've got the complete run. I have not gone through it.
Yeah.
At some point, I need to dig those up and read through it. That was one of the ones that a couple of years back when I was doing a lot of back issue buying, I accumulated the whole run.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I know there's, you know, Ed Brubaker's run, but that's more noir. I'm thinking more of like the superhuman superhero type characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I love Brubaker. I know you do too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Fantastic stuff.
So let's dive into the top list.
Yeah.
We'll start right at the very top, as we often do. Sometime we're going to have to start at the bottom just for the hell of it, but we'll start at the top.
Do that for April Fools next year. We'll do it at the bottom.
Great idea. Remind me, because I will have forgotten. So, top item was, it's old, 9,689 units. Not bad for a top item. What is the top item? It is from Marvel. It is Thanos, the Infinity Revelation OGN HC, which is the original graphic novel hardcover, $24.99. I happen to have in front of me the April 2014 Marvel previews open to the solicit for this, and you're like, why? It was easy to reach when you said, hey, let's talk about that one before mm-hmm. we started recording, because I had just pulled this out a little while ago, because I'm like looking at this thing, and I'm like, you know what's in this? It says OGN. That's an original graphic novel. I haven't read this. How have I not read this? It came out last month. I didn't get this. Why didn't I get this? And I'm looking at it, and yes, it's got the OGN kind of in the middle of the title or whatever, but there comes a point where a couple of words in, it's like, you know, one, I don't pay much attention to hardcover and trade solicits. And two, other than that, it was not blatantly obvious this was new material.
Yeah.
I didn't order this.
I didn't order it either.
This is something that I actually, this evening, have, as we record this, I've emailed DCBS saying, hey, can you add this to my order?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with not epic fail on solicitation, but unfortunate crap, it flew beneath my radar. Because I'm a fan of Starlin. I like Thanos. This looks to be good stuff. Obviously, you know, 9,600 plus, almost 9,700 units, not bad at all. But a little frustrating that it escaped my notice when I should have ordered it months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with Thanos,
do you know what the continuity is in this? Does it take place during the Infinity Event? Is it a sequel to Infinity Gauntlet? I mean, what's, do you know the premise of this? I mean, I, looking at the, I mean, you have the solicit in front of you. Why don't you read it for me so I can get a handle on it?
There is an imbalance in the universe, and since his latest return from Oblivion, Thanos himself feels incomplete. Now, the so-called Mad Titan would put both wrongs right. The revelatory waters in the Infinity Well lead Thanos on a new quest with a once-sworn enemy at his side, the crusade that will bring confrontation with the Silver Surfer and the galaxy's mightiest heroes, the Annihilators. An odyssey that will change everything. Cosmic Maestro Jim Starlin returns to his signature character in a tale of death and rebirth that will transform the Marvel Universe once more. So I think
they transform it every week.
I know. And these odysseys are not as uncommon as they used to be. You know, they used to last for years. Now they last for, 112-page hardcover.
Yeah, until Marvel decides to jump 8 years or 8 months in the future. Next month.
Galaxy's Mightiest Heroes, The Annihilators. It's been a while since we've seen The Annihilators.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
I would have gone with the Guardians of the Galaxy myself.
Or the Avengers.
It's the Galaxy's Mightiest. So
I know, but the Avengers have been... if you've been reading Avengers lately, Cap's been time-hopping all over the place, so...
Well, and they made a pretty good splash, intergalactically not that long ago with one of the crossovers, so yeah.
But this is only 112 pages for $25. I mean, it's kind of thin for that amount of money too. They're really going after the main character and the main writer really for this book, I think.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
You know, this is written and penciled and cover by Starlin. It's got Andy Smith and Frank D'Armata doing, something. I guess it's,
layouts.
Inks and colors maybe.
Yeah.
Colors and letters, maybe. I don't know. So, yeah, I was a little bummed that somehow I had missed this.
Okay.
But it looks to be more or less either current continuity or recent continuity. It could have been set during the Annihilation Conquest era.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to have a new series with him coming up. And there was also in a recent previews a collection of some digital stuff they had done. A God Up There Listening, maybe.
Oh, cool.
So I think that's all gonna play into something. And hopefully it'll be, Starlin. If it's not, that'd be a shame. So I think this is interesting timing on this because, it's kind of between when the movie came out, Guardians of the Galaxy, and when the DVD's gonna come out.
Mm-hmm.
I would have, maybe timed this a little bit more for when the DVD would have come out, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, they didn't.
I don't think there is a release date for the DVD yet.
I am unaware of one.
Because Cap just came out this week or last week.
Yeah, got Cap 2.
And I know I haven't picked it up yet. I got to go. In fact, I wanted to get the special one at Target tonight, and they were sold out. So I'm just going to order it on Amazon, I think, and get it. Because I like having the physical, actual copy of it. Hey, speaking of that, do you know when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming out on DVD?
Yes, same day. It came out on the 9th.
It's out. Okay, it's out. Okay, I missed that. So I'll get that too.
And do you know how I know that?
You probably went to the store and picked it up.
No, I have a better story than that.
Okay.
I have in my hands, and at some point I'll get unlazy and actually scan these things in. I went to the Fan Expo Canada in Toronto.
Yes.
And they had this... it's something they could never do in San Diego. My sister and I talked about this on that episode. They had basically a portable little kiosk where they would take your photo and then they would hand you a ID badge, photo ID badge for either S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra, depending how you had answered certain questions. Do you value loyalty or this or that? A couple of quick things like that. And on the one side, it's a S.H.I.E.L.D. ID card. And on the other side, it's basically reminding you that Cap and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. both come out on, Blu-ray and DVD and stuff on September 9th.
That is cool marketing.
It was brilliant marketing.
That's cool.
Only part that annoyed me is for the first couple of days at this convention, I was never with my sister every time she found them.
Ah, okay.
And she couldn't tell me where to, she tried telling me where to go one time. It's like, no, come here. We'll go right here. And there's like nothing there. It's like they vacated. It's like, did they get scared off? No, they're a moving thing.
Yeah.
Moving targets in conventions like that are annoying.
Yeah, I know.
But I wound up, finding them, lucking into them one day, and I've got both the S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Hydra one.
Oh, good for you. That's
so
cool.
It was cool.
Awesome.
So, great gimmick. Great one to do that with. So, you know, I picked up the Captain America 2 on Blu-ray and 3D and stuff like that. Have not gotten S.H.I.E.L.D. yet.
Okay.
And it's one of those that, you know, man, it's not a cheap set.
No, it's not. I was going to wait for like a gold box, you know, listing or something like that.
if somebody knows of a good place to get the S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1 on DVD, or Blu-ray actually, for an affordable price, under the $80 price tag or whatever.
It is right now on Amazon Prime, it is $55. Oh, but that's not Blu-ray. It is Blu-ray. $55 for Blu-ray.
I'll have to think about that. I may do that.
That's not bad.
It's not too bad. Have they really, going on to a digression into the DVD Blu-ray world for a moment.
Yes.
Captain America obviously was 3D for the second movie. Did they do a 3D Blu-ray release of the first?
The first one. That's a good question.
See, the quandary I find myself in is, having been a good, loyal Marvel fan, I've been picking all these things up on DVD. Because up until the beginning of the year, or actually end of last year, I didn't have anything that would really warrant getting the Blu-ray. I didn't have a Blu-ray player or any way to, you know, watch it at that quality.
Yeah.
My projector broke around that time. I wound up getting a full HD 3D projector, and it was like $1,000, which is not a bad price for that. And was able to save enough on it through the way I got it to get a good 3D Blu-ray player. So now, of course, I want the 3D Blu-ray of all these things, because it's so cool to watch that at home on this big screen. It's like having a mini, I don't want to say IMAX, but a mini, you know, literally a home theater.
Yeah, right.
It's way cool and great way to watch stuff.
I only see Captain America the First Avenger Blu-ray, DVD, digital copy, 2-disc Blu-ray combo, yada, yada, yada. No, okay. 3D. No.
That makes sense. I think it was before the 3D really kind of kicked in.
Yeah.
But I need
I've
to.
I think I've got the. Oh, wait. It's got. Wait. 3-disc Blu-ray 3D Blu-ray DVD combo plus digital copy. Multi-format available.
Okay. So.
Yes. And I will. Oh, yeah. It is. Limited 3D edition. $62 right now.
It's not too bad.
I will shoot this link to you.
Go ahead and shoot me the S.H.I.E.L.D. one, too. You're going to make me spend money.
These are getting
to be very expensive episodes, Chris.
I know. That's my job.
There's
the Cap one.
At some point, my sister and I are going to do an episode on probably both Captain Americas. We picked up The Amazing Spider-Man on Blu-ray and stuff. The second one went ahead and got the first because it was like dirt cheap. And, you know, we had seen Captain America at the theater because it was tying into S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
You know, but we didn't do an episode on it because that was really before we started doing the movie episodes. So at some point we'll go through and do those.
So this is a really dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a TV show, right?
Yes.
They wouldn't have made a 3D of that, would they?
Like, I
for
doubt
a couple
it.
Of episodes? No, that I'm just reaching for something, am I? Okay.
At this point, yeah, I don't think so. Okay. Give it another year or two when there are more 3D TVs and stuff like that out, maybe?
Well, I think the 3D is out the window. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's all... I was looking at a new TV. I might get a 4K TV.
4K you is know. Tempting.
Yeah, it's really tempting, especially since I got a big old honking, you know, crappy, you know, 35-inch TV for my DVDs and everything. So I want to get something pretty nice. So
every once in a while, Tiger Direct will send me a email that has a 4K TV that's like 35-inch or 50-inch or whatever for hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And as I sit here in front of my computer monitors, and I'm thinking, you know, I could use that as a computer monitor.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't pulled the trigger on that.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because how they do the release of some of these trades and stuff versus how and when they release the movies and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're trying to get a synergy here. I think they've kind of sort of do and don't succeed on that because really, I mean, there are the things like, you know, the Sin City or Watchmen or the things that have a very clear, if you like this movie, this is the book to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you start hitting even stuff like the X-Men Days of Future Past, which has a particular storyline in there that you could go pick up, it kind of diffuses into the, well, I'm an X-Men fan, maybe I'll pick up something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's still a little bit of a, not quite a holy grail, but a, if somebody can figure out how to translate all these fans of the TV shows and movies and get a percentage of them to be reading the comics,
mm-hmm.
We're going to see some major changes on the sales charts if that ever happens.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, yeah, we can go back to talking about Constantine about that and Hellblazer. See, mm-hmm. I hope that series takes off, number one, you know, because it'd be wonderful to see. But a Friday night is going to be kind of tough, but... You know, we'll see what happens. But as far as S.H.I.E.L.D. goes, I'm looking forward to seeing how this is going to bridge the gap between Cap 2 and Avengers 3. Because this is all we got, really. I mean, there's, you know, so that'll be kind of fun. And then, you know, if there's going to be any teases to the Ant-Man movie as well. So,
well, I think that the guys behind S.H.I.E.L.D. are learning from what's been working on Arrow.
Yeah,
which is
right.
to bring in more characters and build more stuff up. Mm-hmm. And really, that's a lesson that comes from the comics.
Yeah, and it looks like the Daredevil show is ramping up, too. I saw that Scott Glenn was just hired to play Stick, which is going to be... He's one of my favorite actors of all time, so that's going to be really sweet.
That is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So there's your Max line, by the way. Putting it on Netflix, they'll be able to do more gritty stuff, too.
Yeah, it's one of those things, though. Again, a year or two back, we were lucky to have Arrow and S.H.I.E.L.D. on the air at the same time.
Yeah.
Now we've got this embarrassment of riches with more things coming than we can handle almost.
Oh, Gotham and, oh my God, it's too much almost. Well,
Gotham, yeah. Constantine, Flash, Arrow, S.H.I.E.L.D., iZombie in the wings.
Yep. All the Netflix TV shows coming out.
The Netflix stuff leading up to a Defenders kind of a deal. There's talk of a Supergirl series possibly and a Titans one on TNT.
Titans, that's what I heard, yeah.
It's like, that has me excited.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I got to wonder what percentage of these sales we're looking at are just Hollywood people looking for their next, you know, TV show to go produce or whatever.
Well, and then I read a blurb about today. It's not really spoilers, but they're talking about doing a Star Wars movie every single year. And it's like, whoa, you know, and you're even talking about doing like a Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan movie. I'm like, that would be sweet if you know, if they could pull that off. But
every year
Star
for
Wars,
how long?
Every year. It's like, oh, my God, you know, jeez.
Because I had heard originally when they were going to do this last trilogy that it was going to be trilogy next year, another non-trilogy movie, then the trilogy second part, then another one. Non-trilogy, and then another final of part of the trilogy. Are they going to go after that even?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but you know, it sounds crazy to talk about like that because, you know, me to complain about a Star Wars movie every year when we are getting two Marvel movies or even possibly three Marvel movies every year and a TV show.
Yeah.
and the Netflix show. I mean, that's talk about overload, man, but it's fun because it's working really, really well. So,
well, I mean, if you've got good properties and good material, run with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's impressive how many things they've converted to live action and how many they've done incredibly successfully.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff you would just look at and think, nah, I don't think they can pull that off.
Yeah.
And again, Guardians, two-fifths of the thing was, you know, animated characters.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, so, but you want to hear my Guardian story?
Yeah.
Okay, so I saw Guardians for the second time this weekend with my two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of fell into it because my wife had ordered some furniture for my son's bedroom. And it's at the giant outlet mall in Michigan here in the northern Detroit area. And she's like, hey, can you run up to the furniture store and go get it? And I'm like, sure. And then you know, I brought the kids along with me, you know, hey, they just want to get out of the house and,
mm-hmm.
you know, give Patty a couple of hours off on a Saturday afternoon. So like, all right, let's jump in the car. It's 4:00. And so we run up there. And when we pull in, I mean, it's this giant area. It's your typical outlet mall with, you know, long driveways and everything, winding way around it and everything. And it is huge. And I noticed there's just a lot of traffic there. And I, you know, didn't really think much of it until I got to the backside of the lot where the actual store is where I had to go. Well, we are dead stuck at traffic and nobody is moving. And luckily I had my Jeep there because I ended up hopping the grassy knoll curb to get to the other parking lot on the side of you know, how parking lots are separated sometimes by grass and
by these, you know, non-drivable big sections.
By non-drivable sections. Well, if I had the Pontiac Vibe, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But thank God I had the Jeep, and I just hopped the curb right over. And the kids were like, "Dad, you're going to get arrested." I'm like, "I'm not going to get arrested because the cops can't go anywhere because there's just a million cars everywhere." And I could just see the guys in the cars that couldn't hop this curb, like, being really jealous of me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I pull into the store. We go in, and I ask the guy, I'm like, "What is going on here?" And they're like, "Well, there's construction on either side of the highway, and so that's why everybody's taking their time to get out of here." And I'm like, "But this doesn't seem normal for a late Saturday afternoon. It doesn't seem right." So I get the thing, I put it in the car, and we're like, "Well, let's just kill some time. Let's go back in." And they got a movie theater there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
killing
figured
time. That part out. Since
I figured that part because I'm stuck there. So I'm walking around, and I called my wife and tell her what's going on, and she's like, "Well, you know what? You're better off just getting in your car and, you know, taking your time and just trying to get out." So I'm like, "Okay, it's probably going to be like 45 minutes to get out of this parking lot. It's so many cars there." Mm-hmm. So I'm like, "All right, kids, let's go to the little pretzel place. Let's get a bite to eat. Let's get a bottle of water because we might be in the car a while, you know, just to get out." So I go up to the little pretzel place and get the water for the kids. And I'm like, "What exactly is going on?" I asked this guy what's going on. He said Oprah Winfrey is there for a book signing.
Ah.
And it is. And he's like, "Yeah, it's 2 hours to get out, not 45 minutes. And I'm like, "Oh, my God." So we're like, "Kids, let's go to the movies. I'm not going to sit in my car for 2 hours when I can be sitting in a theater for 2 hours," mm-hmm. kind of thing. So
smart
that's
move.
How we ended up seeing Guardians. There was nothing else playing. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was playing, but neither kids had any interest in that. But yeah, so I ended up seeing Guardians again. And I'm glad I did. It was better the second time around because there was nobody in the theater. We're the only people in the theater, which was great.
I think there's an aspect of going to a film when it's really crowded to get the audience reaction.
Yes.
But I also like going to a fairly empty theater where I can just enjoy the film.
Well, right, because when this film, as you know, there's a lot of comedic elements to mm-hmm. it. So you're laughing along with the other audience members. Everybody gets the joke. It's funny. Kind of do the oohs and ahs and the cheers every once in a while. Like, "Oh, that's," you hear the guy behind me like saying, "Oh, that's cool," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, this time when the jokes are flying, you know, when he's doing the whole Kevin Bacon shtick and kissing Gamora, it's like, nope. Nobody laughed in the theater but me, you know, it was just kind of awkward, but, you know, I picked up on a lot of things I didn't pick up on before. And it mostly was the Thanos Ronan interaction. I thought mm-hmm. that was really, really good. And then also when Rocket, was kind of pleading at the end, when they're all, you know, holding hands part kind of thing, when they're all coming together and, you know, that made it more, just more dramatic in some areas.
Yeah, no, they did some great stuff in that film.
They did, yeah.
And it's one of those things that I've heard stories about how after that movie was released, a lot of the songs on the soundtrack, the iTunes, you know, downloads or whatever, have just shot through the roof.
Oh, well, I've got it on Spotify. I downloaded each individual song on Spotify. And it also plays, and I knew this kind of going into when I first saw it, and then when watching the second time really helped because I know the music played a big part and you're mm-hmm. hearing all the soundtrack and everything. And then you hear it for the first time and you kind of get it. But then the second time you see it, John, you really get it really plays like a musical and the music really sets the tone for the scene, what's going on, how the characters are feeling at that moment, more so than any other Marvel movie out there.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. It was a major part of the movie, you know, big time, which
James
was really
Gunn,
fun for me. Yeah.
He went through the Billboard charts for the 70s and just built himself a playlist and just over time kind of whittled it down. And he used that to get into the era, the theme, the time, the mood.
Yeah.
And when they were doing the dramatic walk down the hallway kind of a shot.
Yeah.
Every movie and TV show has this, but you know, the what they were playing on the sound stage when they were doing that was the same song they used in the movie.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I mean, they know what it is, you know, going in and it helps the actors.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
And it's funny because very successful film, not a first for Marvel, and we're still seeing sales on the source material, the comics, not really drastically changing at all. And the number of people that have seen Guardians, that have seen Avengers, that have seen Cap, Iron Man, Thor, any of these things, it literally would take 8%, 0.5% of the people who are going to buy the stuff on DVD or Blu-ray when it comes out that first week or whatever to move the needle. And I don't mean just a little towards noticeable. I mean like double the sales.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So whoever can crack that nut, whoever can do that, they stand to really win big on the publishing side. Obviously, you know, getting the people reading the comics to the theaters, that's not hard. I think we all fit for the most part in, you know, one showing it on a single day, we could cover the thing. You know, it's drop in the bucket.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's kind of get back into our list here. Do you want to mention where the Guardians showed up here?
Yeah, it's down at rank number 6, trade paperback. It's reorder activity, another 4,037 units for that first volume of the trade, Cosmic Avengers. And it puts its total known reported sales through Diamond, 21,750 units. Want to stress that's through Diamond. This is the sort of a thing, if it had good shelf placement at, so we'll go with Barnes & Noble, because I think that's the only big box bookstore still open. I was going to say, I can't go with Borders. I can't. Amazon's online. That's not going to work. Anyways, and you know they're going to give it a good placement. I mean, they'd be foolish not to. Or even a Hastings, even. They're going to do pretty good numbers through that kind of a mass market outlet. Obviously, we don't see those numbers in or those sales in these numbers. But given how it's been selling on the comic side, is some of this carryover or whatever from the movie? Yeah, maybe. But not so definitively so to say, oh, yeah, certainly. You know? Part of it, though, is, well, we had a good, strong top of the list. By the time we get out of, you know, really just under the top 10, top 11 or whatever, we're under 3,000 units.
Yeah.
So, I mean, things fall kind of fast on this list. You know, after Thanos, we had a new trade for Fables, Volume 20, 8,364. We've got the trade for Batman Earth 1 at rank number 5 there, 4,561 units. We just talked about Guardians. We've got Saga Volumes 3, 1, and 2 at ranks 7, 9, and 10, all of which is reorder. Really, the bottom half of the top 10, all reorder activity.
Yeah.
Which is...
And those three volumes of Saga are all being collected into the hardcover coming out in November, too. So I'm looking... When we ended up doing the November numbers, that is going to be... That hardcover is going to be one of the top of the list. I guarantee it.
So they're doing three trades into a hardcover.
Three trades into a hardcover, yeah. The first, 18 issues?
And interesting.
Probably a lot of nice extra material, yeah. Because typically, you know this, we see two trades into one.
Two trades into a hardcover, two hardcovers into a compendium or omnibus. What do they call them over at Marvel or Image these days? Yeah.
Yeah, compendium, omnibus, yeah.
I mean, Kirkman's turned that into, a pretty regular money-making routine for him.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm surprised they're going with... three for the trade, or three trades for the hardcover type thing.
That is coming out, Saga Deluxe Edition Volume 1 will be out in November 19th.
But, I mean, three trades in the top 10 for one property over at Image, and it's not Walking Dead or another Kirkman property.
Right.
That to me, is some of the strength at Image these days. You know, we've got to go down to, I think, rank 29 before we get a Kirkman property this time around, which is, unsurprisingly, more reorder activity for the first volume of Walking Dead. You know, it's things are changing over at Image. It's not just the Kirkman show anymore for the most part.
No, I mean, the Brian K. Vaughan saga is doing very, very well. Yeah.
Well, and again, it's not just that as well. I mean, they've got East of West doing fairly well. Chew continues to show up on the list. Lazarus is a strong property for them.
Yep. Five Ghosts is coming back too.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've done well over the last year or two, building out kind of their line of you know, creator-owned titles and whatnot. You know, obviously Kirkman's still a power player over there, both in terms of sales and just, you know, being one of the partners and you know, calling a lot of the shots on some of that stuff. But it's good to see them kind of diversify more.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So we talked about how by the time we get down to rank 12, we're under 3,000 units. By the time we get to rank 33, we're under 2,000 units. This is just another sign of how, I don't say lackluster or whatever, but just how mercurial kind of the list is from month to month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes down to what happened to come out that month and stuff. And, you know, this is more or less, actually, it's below average a month.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how this shapes up to the previous months. We've been doing, 2014 has been a pretty good year.
It has. If we just average what's happened in 2014, the average for that, let's not include this month.
Okay.
Was 356,076 units on average. One, 2 months did worse than this, and that was January and February. January, 291,000-ish, and February was 302,000-ish. But like last month was 100,000 units stronger than August. So a lot of it just comes down to what new material is coming out. You know, how often do stores plan on getting, you know, reorder activity? And some of that may not even be on the stores. It may just be, you know, is a new printing needed? How much of it, how many orders need to pile up at Diamond before they kick out a purchase order to the publisher and then kick that back through the system?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain gatekeepers there and whatnot that can come into play. But by and large, it's been a good year. It's just surprising how much, you know, a single month can make. And I think July, little bit of a misleading thing sometimes, in so much as a lot of stuff gets pushed through just to get out in time for San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having those things in the booths at the convention can make a big difference on do they meet their obligations to pay for the booth and stuff at some of these publishers. You know, you want a in-depth analysis of that, just go to almost any year's con report from Chuck Rosansky, and he'll tell you all the trials and tribulations of paying for your booth at San Diego.
Well, and we touched on that last month, too.
Yeah.
You know, what he's going to do, and who knows if he'll come around. I'm guessing he probably will. He'll just have a smaller booth, you know?
I think he's already committed to next year and has some plans in mind.
Yeah.
And part of that's, I don't want to say he's doing it for show. It's one of those he wants to go back and stuff, but it's not just him. Everybody who shows there, or really even at like the Fan Expo in Toronto or almost any convention, you've got a certain outlay as an exhibitor that you need to recoup to break even on this.
Mm-hmm.
Travel expenses, food, shipping your stuff there, the time and energy, you know, of running the booth and whatnot, plus everything it takes you away from the office from. You know, it's surprising how many shows some of these publishers and some of these creators go to.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do we have on the list that looks interesting? We got first volume of Loki, Agents of Asgard at rank 13.
That's a great series. I really am enjoying that series.
How much do you think Loki getting his own series has to do with the portrayal of Loki in the movies?
I think it's got something to do with it, because I think, you know, Tom Hiddleston playing Loki, he's by far still the best villain.
That
in all the movies, even, you know, and there wasn't really a villain in Guardians, I mean, Ronan, I guess, but, you know, yeah, Tom Hiddleston for sure. I mean, I think because of him, this series is out there. And it's interesting because, you know, we've got the young Loki and the old Loki. We've got two of them. And again, for anybody off the street picking this up, they're like, what is going on here between the two Lokis? And I guess we're happy that we don't have a female Loki in here either, or else things would get really confusing.
There's another Loki story you haven't read then.
Okay, maybe I'm not caught up yet. Okay.
I think that was in Original Sin, Thor versus Loki, maybe?
Okay, I don't think I read that one. Maybe I did read that one. I can't remember.
He's a shapeshifter. Give it time. He'll do anything. Yeah. One other thing, actually, on the Guardians, going back to the movies and stuff, down at rank 23, we've got the Abnett and Lanning Complete Collection, reorder activity for that trade, 2,309 units. And that's the run that the movie was really based on.
Right, the original coming out of Annihilation Conquest.
Yes, the one coming out of there. I hesitate to use the term original. for that era of Guardians. Because, of course, you know, original Guardians, that goes way back.
The original modern, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. It's just, you got to be careful these days. There's so many volumes.
You do, and they all came out, like, in the, you know, the classic stuff came out in that giant epic collection.
Mm-hmm. And they're bringing those original characters back to interact with the current ones, with the Guardians 3000 or whatever stuff.
Yondu and everybody. Oh, it's gonna be fun.
Well, and you know, Rocket has his own book. Star-Lord's got his own book. CB Skibelsky was talking at Fan Expo, as were some of the other people on the Marvel panel on. You know, there's a lot of talk of the movie's done really well. Why aren't we giving all these? Why doesn't Drax has his own book, you know, right now? What about Gamora? You know, if the characters are popular, sure, why not give it a shot, see if it works?
Sure. Give them a miniseries anyway, you know?
Yeah. That's actually the smarter move.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because these days, most ongoings from Marvel are just an extended mini.
But you know what? That's what they did with, and I'm looking down the list here at rank 30 with Winter Soldier, The Bitter March. You know, quick 6-issue series taking place in the 1960s, I think.
Thereabouts,
But then again, you know, you don't really have to do an ongoing. Now, granted, there is Bucky in the modern time, his own series and whatnot going on. But this was a nice little quick little sidebar of his past days as the Winter Soldier, as the bad guy Winter Soldier, going on a mission.
It makes me wonder if that was almost a trial balloon to give him his own, you know, kind of ongoing.
Could be.
I hope not, given that the ongoing is going to be very different in tone and style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's again, like you said, this is almost the more villainous version of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Great backstory, great fun too, but you know, it's interesting how many things they're just rotating through the lineup over at Marvel these days.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have that looks interesting? We got the Fuse first volume at rank 36. This is another one of those $9.99 first volumes. Just above that, we had Sex Criminal a few ranks above. Fuse first volume of the trade did 1893. Sex Criminals did reorder activity of 1984 units, putting Sex Criminals volume 1 trade paperback at total loan sales of 21,947 units, which is pretty impressive. That's actually more units than that first volume of the Guardians of the Galaxy trade paperback up at rank 6.
Huh.
Not by much. It's only about 200 or so.
Right.
But still more.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Fuse, I have to admit.
This is one set on a space station, and it's a police procedural.
Okay.
It's fun stuff. Art's, I don't want to say a little shaky, but not something I would normally necessarily gravitate to and say, oh, wow, it's amazing. It's good. Okay. It serves the story. It's just a little more stylized, I guess, would be a way to put it. Non-realistic. It's not cartoony or anything. It's just it's got the indie feel to it, if you will. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No.
What other ones do we have hidden in here that look interesting? We've got some more Infinity Gauntlet reorder activity down at rank 57. I think, again, they're trying to get some of the whole Jim Starlin stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one that I think we're going to need to keep an eye on in the coming months is down at rank 63. Secret Service Kingsman Premier Hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
This collects the 6-issue Secret Service series. Note they've added Kingsman to the name for this hardcover. It did 1,406 units. This is coming out as a motion picture.
Oh, is it really?
This is part of the Mark Millar stuff, and in the back of MPH number 3, I think it was, the letters page, or not the editorial page or whatever from him, seemed to be phrasing it as the first of the Secret Service movies.
Oh, interesting.
So I would assume we've got more coming out in terms of miniseries.
Oh, I did see the preview for this, I think. There's a trailer out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I did see it. Okay.
Kind of a boarding school for young James Bond types.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah. I remember all the gadgets and the Q type character. It's God. Who is in this movie?
I'm blanking on that.
I'm blanking. Oh God, I'm terrible. I shouldn't have brought it up.
it looks. The trailer was great. It looks to be like it'll be a fun film.
Yeah.
So it's This is the kind of thing where that film is directly tied to a particular hardcover in this case.
Yeah.
It could get the bump. It may not. And if it does, it may not happen through Diamond. It may happen through the bookstores. But it's a very different case than, again, just here's an Avengers movie and there's a bazillion Avengers things to go buy if you like the movie.
Right.
And decide to go buy something, which usually doesn't happen.
I'm looking that up. I'm wrecking my brain.
One thing I'm checking out the solicits for here. At rank 71, we've got JLA Earth 2 Deluxe Edition Hardcover. This is the amazing graphic novel from the All-Star Superman creative team. Grant Morrison, Frank Quietly. Okay.
Colin Firth is in this movie.
Colin Firth, that's right. That's
so is Mark Strong, so is Michael Caine. So is
Samuel Jackson.
So is Jackson. So is Mark Hamill.
Yeah, it's got a good cast.
Might be pretty good. Yeah. Directed by Matthew Vaughn.
All right. What was confusing me on these JLA Earth 2 ones? There's one at 71 and another one at 88. One's a hardcover. One's a trade paperback. Both are reorder activity. The part that caught my eye was one of them is JLA Earth 2 with the number 2. The other is JLA Earth 2 with two eyes. It's like, be consistent, guys.
They're different books, though. One is from the 1990s. It was that original graphic novel. And the other one is more recent.
One's a trade, one's a hardcover, one's a deluxe edition of the hardcover with some new material. It's reprinting the same base. One includes the other, I think.
Right.
But the fact that one has the number 2 and one has two eyes for the Roman numeral 2 is just a little weird.
Let me look that one up. Well, you got me going again.
You know me, I'm a stickler for consistency, and when they don't do that, it's just a little weird.
But you remember when the Earth 2 came out.
This was one of the original graphic novel hardcover type things that DC was doing, you know, one or two a year at that point.
Yeah.
It was the kind of the negative antimatter version of Earth 2 with the Crime Syndicate.
Earth 2 with the number 2 is the Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly book.
And what about the one with the Roman numeral 2 down at rank 88?
The other one, JLA Earth 2, that one is...
I think it's also Morrison and Quietly.
That might be Morrison and Quietly 2. It came out in 2000. Yeah, maybe they just renumbered it. Okay, you could be right. Boy, that is damn confusing. You're right.
And on the original hardcover, it was the number 2, not the Roman numeral 2. And it was without a dash versus with a dash. And I know some people are thinking, does it matter? And it did, because the Earth dash 2, they were using the non-dash version to differentiate it from the classic Earth 2 with the JSA. I'm at the point right now where I'm a little curious as to if we've got two multiverses going on in parallel over at DC at the moment. One with Multiversity and the other with the Infinite Crisis fight for the multiverse.
Right.
Or if they're using the same numbering for the worlds and whatnot, and if one is actually going to turn out to be in continuity that people aren't realizing, which would be kind of a fun thing for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it's one of those things that, you know, by the time we're not even out of the top 100, we're below 1,000 units. You know, by the time we hit this, either of the Earth 2s, the deluxe edition hardcover, 1,303, the trade, 1,049 units. Now, for reorder activity, that's not too bad. But, like, right above the trade paperback at rank 87, we've got Katana Volume 1 Soul Taker trade paperback, 1,054 units. Pretty sure that did not have a trade paperback, or a hardcover version, I mean. And that included Katana 1 through 6 and the Justice League Dark 23.1 The Creeper.
Mm-hmm.
Did Katana only last 6 issues? I thought it lasted 8.
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
And if it lasted 8, why not include the other 2?
Huh.
Inquiring minds want to know.
That is, boy, you're bombarding me tonight with all these questions.
Usually it's the other way around. I know
it is, man. You're killing me.
Hang on, Katana went for 10 issues, so where are the other 4 gonna show up?
52.
It's not enough to do a trade. She hasn't really shown up much of anywhere else since then. How are they gonna package those other couple issues?
What number is it?
87.
Okay, 87. Let me do something.
And more to the point, with only 1,054 units for that trade, are they going to bother with a second volume of Katana trade paperback? I don't know that I would.
Good question. Yeah, they'll probably just let it go into obscurity. Yeah, it says, oh, it collects Katana 1 through 6 and Justice League Dark 23.1, the Creeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Huh.
So 7 through 10 just may not get collected.
I think you're right.
And I'm okay with that. Right. I actually think that's a smart move for them to do. It kind of sucks for the people who get stuff in trade, but the trade isn't paying for content creation. It's kind of icing on the cake. They made the decision to end this back around, I'm going to say...
February. Cover date was February, issue 10.
It actually came out, though, in December of 2003. Yeah. 13, I mean.
Probably, yeah.
So I'm figuring somewhere around July, August, they made the call to cancel it, which was...
This is interesting. On Comic Book DB, it says Katana Soul Taker collects 1 through 10 and Justice League Dark 23.1.
That makes more sense. The other thing that's confusing is this has a May 14 solicitation, yet didn't come out until August, which was on time.
Okay, so maybe they repackaged it. That could be.
By that point, they would have, after they solicited, realized they were going to, a month or two later, end it. Made that decision and then decided just to beef it up.
Mm-hmm.
What price point do you have on that?
$19.99.
Even with the solicit saying it's got all 10 issues plus the one?
Yeah.
That's a good deal. It's a great deal. And granted, it's still Katana.
256 pages for $19.99.
Hmm.
And I'm not seeing any of my notes.
What turnaround time do they usually have between the last of something coming out in the new 52 and the collected edition coming out?
Well, when the new 52 first started coming out, it depended on, you know, that character. I remember the Flash came out right away and Superman came out right away. But a character like Swamp Thing, I think, took a year for the collected edition to come out because they didn't want to swamp the market with 52 collected editions.
Oh yeah. That would kill it.
Yeah, that would kill it. So they really spread. You know, I think Supergirl came out like a year and a half. The first trade paperback of Supergirl came out 18 months after issue one. And then they finally caught up to those. Huh?
How about Superboy?
Boy, off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
It would be interesting to compare that within like certain franchises with how the trade, not the trade, but the monthlies were doing. And if delaying one of those so long made it hard for somebody to get kind of caught up on a series they skipped initially.
Well, I think Superboy might be the not best example because he crossed over into that Hell on Earth, and he also did the...
So did Supergirl.
So did Supergirl. You're right. So did Supergirl, but he also did Hell on Earth, and the one before that was the one where they had
the Titans Ravagers and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
The Ravagers one, right.
I forget what that one was called, but yeah. I'm curious how much getting the trade out in a timely manner, or a collected edition, trade or hardcover.
Superboy and the... No, that was the old issues.
Yeah, Superboy and the Ravers was the old stuff.
Yeah.
It was the Ravagers series that it crossed over with, as well as Titans. But I'm curious how having a collected edition, if it really does kind of help sales or stem the bleeding or whatever on a monthly book, or if it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because
the culling, that's what it was.
That's what it was, the culling, that's right. I just don't know how many people, if they haven't been on a book, are actually going to try to go catch up and get on the story or just give it a try, realize it may be inaccessible, and bail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if they had easier on-ramps onto titles, it would make it more likely that we would see some true leveling off in sales and maybe some upswings here and there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, you know, when we talked about Superboy coming out, that was one of my favorite titles of the new 52. And then Culling came around and I just lost interest. I dropped it like a rock.
Well, and that was one where they replaced the lead character.
Yeah, you're right.
They did a stealth relaunch of that along with Batwing. Green Arrow was the one that I think changed the most from how the tone and style was, from how it is now to how it was when it started. But with the Arrow TV show, that kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
it's a shame that the Arrow series hadn't started a year sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it had, when we got the relaunch of the new 52, they would have just started with that take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have been a bit of a game changer, because they would have had different creators on that title, and those creators could have been used on something else.
Yeah, and that way they didn't have to have the Arrow comic book that was coming out to the digital first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of things could have played out very differently that way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it looks like this Katana does collect the first 10 issues.
Well, that's good, because otherwise the other ones just wouldn't have come out. It, again, was not how it was originally solicited, which is what I have on my spreadsheet here, because I don't know that they actually release updated solicitations in a... Well, I think they have updates on that on the Diamond website.
That's where I get mine from.
I just have an automated system to go pull those and update my data.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you do this stuff by hand.
I do it by hand. I know. Well, no, on my release schedule, I don't do what's collected in it anymore. I just pull what the title of the book is. I don't have time to go through. That took forever.
Yeah.
To go through it all. And now just by doing the title, and because what I have like right now in front of me, John, is mm-hmm. I've got my release schedule up, the current one, what's coming in the future, and what has gone in the past. So I'm looking at August. And then also I have the Marvel and DC solicitations up. But again, looking at that, the Thanos book, for example, is not listed in the August solicitations because it came out, it was previous in the old April one that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have that solicit in front of me. So yeah, it's just a nightmare. I can complain.
It's a lot of data to juggle.
It is.
We do this once a month as we talk about the sales and stuff. For retailers, this is potentially a day-to-day concern if they've got somebody coming in saying, you know, I'm interested in this. Has it come out?
Yeah.
And off the top of their head, there is no way most of these retailers are going to know. It's an unrealistic expectation, you know, and can they look it up fast enough to go answer the question for somebody? Sometimes, yes. If it's a new comic day, I wouldn't put money down on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why in my podcast, you know, for my little news section that I go to Diamond and I get the shipping and product updates for the week and to see what changed. Now, one thing that you may know that I don't, I just recorded last night and I caught this on Diamond's website, was that original Sin hardcover that had a price jump of $49.99, $50 up to $75.
Wow.
And they didn't say in you know, they usually say why. It didn't say why. It just said they got the price jump. So that's my mission for this week is to go out and find out why that is such a huge jump in price. They must be adding more stuff to it. I just don't know what they're adding.
They may be pulling in the two miniseries. Mm-hmm. And then there was also the annual that got added after the fact. I would expect the miniseries, if they're jumping it by that much, that seems like a huge page count increase.
Mm-hmm.
And going from, you know, 9 or 10 issues, you know, the 8 plus the 0 and the annual, maybe adding another 9. Well, that would almost double the page count, though, if they added both miniseries. I don't know what they're doing. I think Marvel's got...
I don't know what they're doing. Like I said, I'm going to go and investigate it. Yeah.
Marvel's got a bad habit, though, of soliciting things and then just kind of changing things after the fact.
Oh, yeah. They've been doing that for years.
Yeah,
especially just in the basic credits of the, you know, who's the artist and everything, which they should have on file.
I figure some of that's going to fluctuate as people get busy, sick, or whatever. But like every issue of the last four that were solicited of Hawkeye, they've solicited at one price and then bumped it up a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just that's not cool. But that title has other problems. So it will solve itself, no doubt.
Right. Oh, for sure.
So what else? Actually, there's one I want to talk about down at rank 279. We've got Skyman Volume 1, The Right Stuff, trade paperback, 432 units from Dark Horse, $14.99. Four-issue miniseries, ties into the Captain Midnight stuff. It was good stuff. Not, oh my God, brilliant, everybody must read it, but solid.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 432 units. A couple of a little ways above that at rank 251, Suicide Risk Volume 3 trade paperback, 479 units from Boom Studios, another $14.99 trade. Both of these are not bad price points. Suicide Risk has some great riding. Skyman with some fun stuff, again, tied into the Captain Midnight. Both of these are well under 500 units. Mm-hmm. That means one out of every four or six stores, depending how many stores you think are out there, got a copy.
Right.
Maybe everything's being met by the monthly series in terms of demand. I'm certainly not suggesting stores stock stuff that they don't think they can sell. But at these levels, did either of these really need to get collected and trade? From the direct market perspective.
Mm-hmm.
From the mass market perspective, at bookstores, returns could kill you at this level. But flip side, maybe you don't get it into stores at that level, but you get it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That has some longevity there. I look at how many of these things are down here, and it's like, it seems like not a losing proposition, but a really thin margin to be operating in.
Well, I'll give you one even further. On August 20th, from IDW, Airboy Archives Volume 2 trade paperback for $29.99 came out. I have it right in front of me right now, and it is not on your list.
Yeah.
And that's a damn shame, because that is a fantastic series that Andy Tom got me onto. And it's the second volume, and I believe, talking to Chris Ryle over at IDW, they are committed in getting the entire series out in trade paperback. But, you know, they say that at the beginning, and when, you know, if they don't see it even come on a list, I fear that it may not be, they may not complete the set, you know?
Well, I kind of hope they do for a couple of reasons. One, sometimes I think when they commit to things like that, they're doing it knowing, yeah, the sales may not be there at the end, or even mm-hmm. in some cases too much initially. But by putting those out that way, they're getting that because this is the stuff from the 80s and 90s, right?
Yep. It's a Chuck Dixon, Tim Truman stuff. Yeah.
Chuck Dixon, Tim Truman. Great creators.
Oh,
definite
fantastic.
Followings.
I'm so glad I got turned on to this.
This is material that, you know, they can't release digitally, probably, because those were comics that were done really before the digital pre-production era.
Mm-hmm.
So by committing to saying, yep, we're going to put all these in trade, it's essentially committing to, we're going to redo the production side of this to where we have the digital versions that we can also be putting on Comixology or whatever platform they were to so choose, and get the thing out that way. In other words, they may not be expecting to even necessarily break even on the trades, but just use that as the budget item, if you will, to put the cost of getting these, you know, reworked digitally. You know, because everything these days, if they don't have, you know, PDFs or some other digital equivalent of every page they're doing at every publisher these days, I would be shocked.
Oh, they have to. Oh, you know they are.
I know they are, because, I mean, that's what the printers are wanting.
Right.
If you could find a printer that's, yes, give us the film, we'll print the stuff, they're like Amish or something, I guess. I don't know. I mean, nobody does that these days. It's just, it doesn't make sense to.
Right.
So if you can take some of that material that was done in the pre-digital era, get it into the digital format, now you've got it to where, again, digital sales, trade sales, you've recaptured some of your intellectual property into a much more usable format.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's the smart way to go. But yeah, darn shame that that didn't even show up on the list.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe you can do a look for me to see where Airboy Volume 1 showed up too. I have that coming out in March. What is it?
March of this year?
March of this year. Yep. Volume 1, I have that coming out on March 12th, 2014. I could be wrong, and that might be in February, though, too. My list might be wrong. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great series, and it's sad because we look at so many things that come up at the bottom of this list, and you're wondering how that even got on there. You know, we joke about that sometimes. You know, what's it, you know, you even joked about it at the top of the show. You know, let's start with the bottom of the list, see how bad it is.
Well, it's not so much see how bad it is. It's just
no, but I know what you're getting at. Right, yeah.
It's easy to start at the top and talk about the things people have heard of.
Yeah.
Versus these things, there's great material usually flying at the bottom of the list that just doesn't make it into stores. Most people don't see it or aren't aware of it.
They're never aware of it, right?
Yeah. I have looked in February and March, and I am not seeing from IDW Airboy at all.
See, there you go. Yeah.
And in March, the list bottomed out at 346 units.
Okay. We might have to wait for the end of the year to see the 1,000 book one come out.
Yeah. Even that, though.
If we make it on there, right. I know. We may not see it on that.
It probably would not, because normally what we see pop up at that point is things that have flown under the radar of the list, but just barely all year. So something like this that isn't going to have constant reorder activity.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what we normally see is kind of the quiet evergreen material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's disappointing, because it was, I mean, I didn't read it myself. It's not really stuff I'm interested in. But again, great creative team.
Mm-hmm.
I recall it being very highly thought of back when it was coming out. So for it to not make the list at all.
Right. Oh, and the covers of this is, you know, so great, too. So, oh, well, what can you do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. The price points, man, all over the place this time around. 52 items at the $19.99, 51 at $14.99. Had some stuff as high as the $99.99 price tag and as low as $4.99. Most of the sales tended to be, most of the items, about two-thirds of them almost, between the $15 and $25 range.
Mm-hmm.
Really, at the high end of the spectrum, anything 30 or above was only about 8-9% of the stuff, so that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was just a so-so month.
Typical month, yeah.
Yeah, a little below average overall, a couple of things at the top. But it's really showing that if you're somebody who is waiting for the trade, talk to your retailer, let them know what you want, pre-order online, do whatever you need to. Otherwise, there's no guarantee these things are going to show up at your local store.
Mm-hmm.
And with these kinds of orders and stuff, if it doesn't show up there, it may not stay in print that long.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want to get something, keep an eye on previews, better eye than I tend to at times, actually, and order it there.
Yeah, don't wait. Go get it.
Yeah. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, man. It sounds good. What's coming up on your show these days?
Oh, let's see. All kinds of stuff. Obviously, the weekly comic spotlight is still going strong with Drew and stuff. In the next one I record, we're going to talk about Justice League United number 1, which has the Legion of Superheroes in it.
Oh, cool.
Very excited about that. I love that group. We're going to talk about Edge of Spider-Verse and Copperhead from Image. That's by Jay Faerber.
Neat. I'm gonna pick that one up too. I'm gonna read Copperhead. I heard good things about it so far.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I've been a fan of Jay Faerber's stuff for years.
Mm-hmm.
He did Dynamo 5, Noble Causes. He did Titans for a little bit over at DC. Yeah, he's a really good writer. Has some interesting ideas, and I think Copperhead just looks like fun.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So we got that. Let's see what else. Recorded an episode with my sister on Arrow. That'll probably go up about a week after this. Did that for the first season. We're probably going to do one on the second season. I don't know how quickly if we'll get that done the next in time to follow up immediately on the heels of the season one episode or not. But if not, we'll do that at some point. I'm just trying to keep up on my reading and stuff. I have just been... between going to various conventions, recording about various conventions, recording about various movies, TV shows, etc., I've been keeping kind of busy.
You're a busy man, absolutely.
But it's
fun
stuff.
The con was fun.
Oh yeah, Toronto yeah. Fan Expo Canada. Thursday, Friday, Sunday were great. Saturday was a lot of fun, but it was just insanely crowded.
Really.
And my sister's pointed out to me a few times that, you know, I could have gotten into these panels, maybe not have had as good of a seat, but I probably could have walked in right before they started. So I didn't have to line up an hour early for some of these things like Nathan Fillion and whatnot, but I did. So between going to just a couple of panels and, them being in the different buildings and stuff like that, that ate up most of my Saturday. And it was fun, but it was just crowded. But again, I was able to get into things like the Nathan Fillion panel, the William, we skipped the William Shatner actually, cause we'd just seen him in, San Antonio, but like, Matt Smith, Edward James Olmos, Stephen Amell. These are the kinds of things I wouldn't have even bothered trying in San Diego. Just cause the line for the Hall H or whatever, or Ballroom 20 would have just been, you know, around the block.
Yeah.
There were a few lines that were long, but man, when they moved, when they didn't move, you could sit down, which is nice. And when they moved fast and got you into the room pretty much nonstop.
That's good.
So it's a show that I think is well worth going to if there are celebrities that you're interested in. There were also more actual comic books in the exhibit hall floor than I've seen in ages.
Good. Yeah, I know our friend Mike Pfeiffer goes a lot to that show. He's got family up there, but... Mike didn't go this year, but yeah, he said great things about it in the past. It's one of those shows that he doesn't want to miss.
I can totally understand that, both in terms of the celebrity stuff. And again, if you're looking to do some back issue buying, and it's not the high grade silver and gold and all that kind of stuff. That's more of a San Diego thing. It's just you're looking for the obscure 90s, 80s, 70s type stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be there.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't dig through all the back issue boxes or whatever, but they seem to have a fairly impressive selection. I didn't really pay too much attention to the prices because really, I honestly don't keep up on what back issues go for these days. Either I have them and therefore I don't care because I have them, or I just, it's whatever I'm willing to pay. But there was a couple of booths that had, you know, here's complete runs of Superboy and the Legion from when it first flipped over to that title.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I mean, just these bricks of comic books. The flip side, you know, if you're traveling up to there and you buy that kind of a stuff, getting it back home takes a little bit of work.
Right.
But yeah, fun stuff. And then the Austin Wizard World is coming up in just a couple of weeks. So I'll be doing that one, probably doing a panel with Derek Royal of Comics Alternative.
Cool. Oh, awesome.
We're trying to get that set up for, I think, a Friday evening panel. We were a little late in the game getting organized on that, so I don't think it'll be in the printed schedule and stuff, but as soon as I've got solid information as to when and where it'll be, I'll let people know. Because it's going to be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday convention for Austin. I think it's the same weekend as Austin City Limits or something like that. So I will probably take the afternoons off from work, but work in the morning.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But it should be a fun convention.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's pretty much what I got. Couple of more movie ones in the pipeline in terms of wanting to go watch the two Captain America movies. Of course, now I'm going to have to go get that that 3D Blu-ray of that first one first.
Yes, for sure.
you know, and then the Amazing Spider-Man stuff. If people have thoughts on what they'd like to hear my sister and I talk about in terms of movies and TV shows, please post on the forum. Let me know. We're planning on watching certainly Gotham, definitely Arrow, Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Beyond that, haven't made a firm decision either way on Constantine. That may depend if it's what we do is we get together on Wednesdays and Fridays. We do dinner and we watch TV on my big screen. And we're literally eating as we watch the first thing every evening.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Certain shows don't get watched at that point. I am incredibly squeamish and, you know, it's just a bad combination.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I haven't decided on that or iZombie when that comes out. But I'll certainly try the first episodes of each, maybe give them a few, at least the first.
That's what I'll do. Yeah.
See how it goes. But haven't decided how we're going to podcast about those. On movies, it's pretty easy to just watch the DVD or the movie and then record for an hour or so.
Well, that's the thing, because I'm changing up my schedule for podcasting because I want to come home during the week and actually watch these TV shows and not record like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday during these shows. So I am changing up my schedule. I'm going to be recording on Sundays from now on.
Oh, interesting.
Just because I, you know, and Walking Dead will come on, 10 o'clock on Sundays, usually my time in Detroit. So if I sit down to record at 8, I can get done with the recording, you know, do a 30, 40 minute show then I can sit there and watch Walking Dead on a Sunday night and edit it, and you know, and not feel rushed coming home from work. Oh, I got to do this on a Wednesday night.
Yeah,
you know, got to watch my show. Got to, you know, and then I got to get to bed because I got to get up to work the next day. And you know, Sunday you just take your time, kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm going to be doing. So,
well, that makes sense. I mean, for television shows, what we've done with like Continuum and stuff like that is just kind of do a season as mm-hmm. an episode, and that's what we did for the first season of Arrow. But the challenge with that is remembering everything that kind of happened and having, you know, not missing some of the obvious things to talk about
yeah,
in one of those
you
episodes.
Take notes. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking we're going to need to start doing, particularly with the number of shows starting up,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, I want a podcast about things like, Flash and Gotham, but certainly not do it on an episode by episode basis. That's just that's crazy that,
right,
for me,
at
least.
Nuts. Yeah.
There are other people who do that, more power to them, but I've also got, you know, 40 or 50 comics a week to be reading as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to take notes because then you get a character like the Huntress who shows up, and then she shows up again five episodes later, and they refer back to that episode, and you're like, you have to remember what exactly happened and what nuances are they going to refer to, and what are they going to skip, kind of thing. So yeah, almost you got to take copious notes, really.
Well, what we did for Arrow season one that worked well was we rewatched the pilot, mm-hmm. just kind of remember how this all started, and that was really good because there were a couple of characters that went away and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
But then we watched the special features on the season one DVD set or Blu-ray set. My sister had edited together the various flashback scenes on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And with only one exception, she had to put the one where they get onto the boat, and that was about halfway into the season, put that at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else just played through like an hour and a half movie or some such.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And that gave us the whole island side of it. And then we watched the season one recap that they have on the season two stuff. And that kind of gave us the overview. It's like, oh yeah. So between that and the special features on the season one Blu-ray set, that gave us quite a bit to talk about.
Yeah. Did she do that for volume two, the season two that streamed the island scenes together yet?
She has.
Okay.
It's fun how they use those things to really tell a coherent storyline.
Yeah.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, my last show I did a review of the Marvel Masterworks Marvel Rarities Volume 1. And this one collected adventures of Dr. Droom, who was Dr. Druid, John. You might remember mm-hmm. from the early 1960s that predated Fantastic Four number 1. And also it featured the Tales of the Watcher from the Tales of Suspense series and also the Silver Surfer series. And then also Dr. Doom, good old Victor from Astonishing Tales in the early 1970s. So interesting choice to merge all these three together into a book called Rarities. I wasn't too keen on it just because the Dr. Druid stuff had been previously collected into the Amazing Fantasy Omnibus from a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Tales of the Watcher... I didn't really care that much about, you know, The Watcher. And then the second half is kind of like a Rod Serling Twilight Zone take on, you know, he kind of interjects himself into these old horror stories that I wasn't too keen on. But it was interesting to read, because I've got the original Atlas stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you take the original book and look at The Watcher take on it, and it's the exact same verbiage and talking and the word balloon parts. But the panels have changed and the art has changed and so that was kind of interesting to see. But that's about it. And then Dr. Doom, I kind of was saying, you know, they should have just put the Dr. Doom stuff in its own Masterworks with the supervillain team up stories. I think that would have been much better.
I think it would have sold this, better and made people happier.
Yeah, I mean, this Masterwork was kind of all over the place. I mean, I understand why they did it, but. You know, in a way, I don't know why they did it. It was just kind of odd. But next week, my next show, I think I'm going to be going over I just got my review copy of the American Comic Book Chronicles, the 1970s from Tomorrow's Publishing.
Cool.
So I'm going to go over that. That's really, I thumbed through it the other day. Fantastic stuff going over the 70s. And, you know, more my stuff and your stuff, too, growing up a child of the 70s kind of thing. And, you know, reading your first Justice League comic and stuff like that. So that's going to be a lot of fun to go over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally.
Yep.
I think everyone has kind of a sweet spot for comics. And a lot of it is when they really got into comics.
Well, I mean, I got really into comics with, you know, like probably you with the Frank Miller Daredevil and Spider-Man in the black costume in the mid 80s and that kind of stuff when I was a teenager. But, you know, I still remember and I still have a few JLA 1970s comics and a few Batman comics that I bought, you know, at the corner drugstore as a kid, and they're all beat up. But you don't want to let go of those things. You'll never let go of those things.
Well, I think there's when you first kind of dabble in comics, but then there's a certain point where you really have dived in deep.
Yeah.
Because I had a couple, you know, Fantastic Four or whatever, you know, when Herbie was first introduced was one of the earlier comics I'd gotten or whatever. But it was the Justice League issue that had the sun, the heroes kind of flying out around it, and Batman on like this jet scooter, you know, water ski kind of, you know, jet ski or whatever thing in space. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, from there on, I think I've got a complete run of Justice League, you know, cool. Off the rack.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I've extended it further back, et cetera. It's one thing to go buy back issues, but to me, it's a very different thing to go, you know, fill the gaps after the fact versus be getting them as they're coming out each and every month. Mm-hmm. You know, it's neither is better or worse, but it's a different kind of fandom. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Sure. But that's what's going on with me.
Cool. That do it then?
That'll do it, man. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.